RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
With the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart ass remarks.
Okay, and welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. And we are your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get to us, do so. CrushPerformance.com is the website. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, go to Crush Performance. All the hookups are there. Today, a really big show as the Crush War on Sugar continues. It's raging on, and today is just another battle in the big fight against sugar as we try to just raise awareness and get to the bottom of the science. So I want to thank everybody all week long for their questions. It's really stirred this episode of the show in a different direction. The original topic and theme for the show was going to be fueling your body for sport. And through a bunch of Twitter threads and questions on Facebook, we've really started to focus on the misunderstandings surrounding sport drinks and the role of sugar in terms of sport. Coming off of last week's show, our second show in our concussion series, thanks everybody for your feedback on that. It was absolutely an amazing series looking at head injuries in sport and where we're at and understanding that. You can get that podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Play and Stitcher. You can get all that at crushperformance.com. But today we're going to get to it. And just to set the tone, if you do have questions, let us know. We answer every single note that we get today. You can text us on 101260. Standard text rates do apply, but we want your questions. And today what we're going to do is get to the bottom of the science. This isn't opinion. This isn't conjecture. This is just the cold, hard facts as we understand them at this point. And we're joined by a Crush favorite. We always say if we're looking for answers, try to find the best minds in the world, the best people in the world. And while there's no doubt about it, if you've listened to the show, you've heard her before. She's the chief of biomedical research at the Glycemic Research Institute. A Crush favorite, Dr. Andouise Allen joins us. Dr. Allen, thanks for joining us again in this episode of the Crush War on Sugar.
Hey, Crush, how you doing?
Two thumbs up, Dr. Allen. Listen, really excited to get you on here. And I just wanted to check in and see how things are going with you. I know the research world is rolling on, and that's one of the reasons we're so excited to have you on today.
Well, nothing excites me more than good, definitive, quantifiable science, right?
Absolutely.
If it's quantifiable, if it's definitive, I'm all jacked up.
Yeah.
And really, most of the new greatest research relates to sports drinks,
yeah,
which is interesting, and fuel partitioning, and that's really where it's going now. That the old paradigm that a calorie is crap. That's crap.
Yeah, it is. And we're going to get to that because that's actually one of the questions that have come over the Twitter feed and on Facebook here over the last week. But Doc, let's talk a bit about your history because, you know, this war on sugar isn't something new. The Crush War on Sugar, we've dedicated one show each month to just educating people on how to feed themselves properly. And interesting enough, Dr. Allen, we've gotten notes through Twitter and on the text board and through our email, accusing us of demonizing sugar, believe it or not. And I have to sit back and,
hey, we didn't demonize it. The universe did.
And well said, well said. But I guess my retort to that, after I sat back,
we didn't demonize black holes either, but they exist.
Yeah, amen to that. Amen to that. When I sit back and think about those messages, Doc, you know what I decided? Darn rights we're demonizing sugar. Darn rights we're demonizing sugar. Listen, sugar, you know, in the most wanted list when it comes to our general health, Sugar might be number one, Dr. Allen. I mean, look, there's associated with, listen to all of these sort of health issues associated with the sugar consumption at the level it's at today. Increased risk of certain cancers, increased risk of degenerative brain diseases, obesity, diabetes for athletes, reduced sport performance and recovery. And there's so much more. So when I hear those messages and I've you know, written back to them, darn rights, we're demonizing sugar because we need to be more aware. Don't you agree with my statement here, Doc, or my stance? I'm up on my soapbox, I guess.
I know. I love that you're in this war, and they're calling it sugar wars, but really it's not sugar wars. It's really a war of the science of nutrition. Okay, and one thing a good scientist will always accept. Okay, Einstein did, Tesla did, Madame Curie did, all the greats did, Linus Pauling, and that is when you argue against reality, you will lose. Okay, well, and that's true in physics, in quantum physics, and we're working with NIH and NIH laboratories now on identifying subatomic particles in food, like coffee beans and things like that, to discover, you know, the phenolic compounds and things like that. So we're getting down to a subatomic particle level. You know, we built a mini hadron collider at our laboratory. And so we can look at these subatomic particles, but it's only just in the past few years that, you know, you're even able to buy equipment. Like that piece of equipment's $500,000, okay? You want to look at subatomic particles and quarks. You know I love a quark now. You know I love a quark.
Amen. I know you love a quark. And Doc,
a quark.
Yeah, isn't it interesting to where technology's allowed us to go, and we're just on the cusp of this. Hey, listen, Dr. Allen,
it is. The new science is crazy.
Well, listen, this
now we're combining physics with nutrition.
Right. And you've been on this battlefield for quite some time. I want to go back to your days as one of the top 10 nutritionists, biochemists in the world when you were touring with Newsweek, just fighting the good fight way back in the day. Maybe fill our listeners in with this because, you know, this is sort of where I got the idea for the war on sugar, hearing about you going to war against these top nutritionists and diet experts, just, you know, telling it like it is.
Well, you know how I get pissed off at the rapid spread of high-tech ignorance, right?
Right.
It just pisses me off. And there's good science and there's bad science. So there were 10 of us named the top 10 nutritionists in the United States. And, you know, they would drag us around to Las Vegas or Disney World to speak to hundreds of thousands of people. And they'd stick us up on the stage and go, okay, now you guys argue with each other, which really wasn't much of a leap, okay?
Right.
Since we love to argue. And they'd always put me next to Dr. Atkins. And I'm sorry, man, but I just had to tear his ass up. I was like, seriously, what are you talking about? Ketosis and ketogenesis, the most inefficient way for the body to work. What are you talking about? Well, you know, fast forward, you know, a couple of years, we're lecturing Disney World, and he goes, Dr. Allen, I'd like to see you backstage. I got some bad news, you know, about his heart and ketosis. And he goes, I'm switching to low glycemic. Your research. I was like, okay, good. Well, a couple of weeks later, he dropped dead, you know, on the sidewalk from a heart attack. But we would just go at each other, man. We would just go at each other. And one of my, you know, favorite things to do, I'd bring this gigantic suitcase. And they go, why do you always drag that? Don't you just have a briefcase? Why do you drag that suitcase out on stage? And I go, research, data, I'm ready for you. I'd pull it up and I'd go, you know, the definitive study at Harvard, and da-da-da. And they go, oh, God, there she goes. She's going off. But, you know, that, like I said, you can't argue against reality. And when I pull out the research and I'd go, okay, did you read the definitive study that was done, da-da-da, you know, and published at PubMed? And they'd go, well, no. And I'd go, well, after you read it, why don't you come back and then we'll discuss it? Because until then, you ain't got nothing to say.
Right. And I like it. And Doc, you're behind a lot of this research. You have done human in vivo clinical trials looking at the effects of the food we eat on our bodies. And the information that's come out of those trials and your work with some of the biggest food companies in the world has really, really set the tone of reality. So, you know, that sort of led you, you know, fast forward a little bit, you're touring in Newsweek. I thought it was really interesting when you were asked to address the UN Council in New York. That was a major stepping stone as well. And I think for me, because I was familiar with your science, it wasn't so much that you know, you were invited. It's that they finally recognize how important it is to get ahead of the curve, because we're in dire straits when it comes to overall global health right now.
Yeah, and I would say that's probably the most exciting thing I've ever done in my whole life, was been invited to address the entire United Nations, every country. And I had been working with the you know, chief of genetics at National Institutes of Health for 5 years and Johns Hopkins University. And what we were researching was, you know, they were the ones that broke the human genome code, which is pretty significant, okay? And they, you know, found the sickle cell trait on the DNA, and they went, hey, you know, if we can do something with this sickle cell trait, if we can somehow, you know, realign it or redirect it in children with sickle cell polymorphisms, you know, we can actually maybe make a difference, you know? And that was our whole thing. And so we did a lot of research on dysregulated arginine metabolism in sickle cell traits. And, of course, arginine is my specialty. I received the first patent ever awarded on L-arginine and growth hormone, which I was a scientist to discover that it had to cross the blood-brain barrier and be elicited by the hypothalamic pituitary axis. So, again, the rapid spread of high-tech ignorance. When I look at the amount of data out there that's wrong on nitric oxide, which is, of course, directly related to growth hormone and arginine, and GH, I'm like, seriously? This is the best stuff you can put together on nitric oxide and GH? You're just off the track. So one of the interesting things is that relate to sports is you see these young black athletes dropping dead on the basketball court. Yeah? Well, guess why? They have an undiagnosed sickle cell trait. They go out and get these energy drinks, and they drink them, and bam, they're dead on the court. Because you take, you know, somebody with a sickle cell trait, and they got the cardiovascular profile of a 90-year-old by the time they're 18. So they get, their heart will not withstand certain types of energy drinks or sports drinks that can actually kill you. So now we're talking about drinks that can kill you, you know, if your body isn't going to accept it.
Yeah, we're talking with Dr. Andweis Allen. Doc, and the great thing about that whole story for me and the real rub here is you donated all your science on sickle cell to the United Nations to help the world, you know, overcome that disease. We're talking with Dr. Andweis Allen, the chief of biomedical research at the Glycemic Research Institute in Washington, D.C. And Doc, that, again, I have to thank you for that, because that was a real big move. And of course, the UN is still thankful for that.
I think it's the only right thing to do. Always do the right thing and you never have to worry, right?
Right. Well, and I guess that's sort of the push behind the Crush War on Sugar. We're just trying to educate people, Doc, and try to get everybody up to speed on what they should be thinking about, because it's quite clear to me, you know, working with the athletes at the highest level of sport and also consulting with young clubs and young athletes around the world right now, how much misconception there is when it comes to the process of fueling the body. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, this is sort of turned, you know, through the social media chain towards focus on sport drinks and the amount of sugar in these sport drinks. And we have some registered dietitians and people at the highest level of sport arguing the fact that, hey, sugar equals energy. And if the role of a sugar or a sports drink is to fuel the body and hydrate the body, then it's doing its job. But it's
okay. Guess what? Load of crap.
It's just not that simple, is it, Dr. Allen?
Load of crap.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I always say to these people? they don't like it, but if you want to, like the whole thing now in sports drinks, you know, just like in obesity and diabetes and Alzheimer's, which is really, you know, type 3 diabetes.
Right.
Is fuel partitioning. Okay. So to say that all sugars are created equal, or they all act the same in the body. Or that's like saying, you know, a maltodextrin molecule is going to act like a glucose polymer or a glucose molecule, which is just completely absurd. The body doesn't handle. Listen, if all calories were created equal, right, then we would have diets just, we could all lose weight. We go, okay, here's what you got to do. It's really simple. But what, you know what they're missing? They're missing the first law of thermodynamics. Now, you and I didn't make up the first law of thermodynamics, did we?
No, we didn't. We just happened to really understand it, I suppose.
Okay, and that plays in with calories in and calories out and sugars. And this notion that all sugars and carbohydrates are basically sugars are created the same. They're not. They don't have anything in common, okay? So if you look at the blood glucose response of a glucose molecule, right, or a glucose polymer, or a maltodextrin, okay, compared to even like sucrose, okay? Some sports drinks have sucrose in them, okay?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the metabolic, well, let's look at the first law of thermodynamics and the numbers, okay, of how those sugars and carbohydrates, which we've been doing at clinical research for the fruit, human in vivo, clinical research for 30 years, okay, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies on stevia, on agave, on every sweetener on the face of the earth, on every carbohydrate and every sugar. So I'm going to look at the data, okay? So going back to the first law of thermodynamics, which clearly states the total energy inside a closed system remains constant. Okay, so for you math and science geeks, where U is the internal energy of the system, Q is the heat supplied by the system, and W is the work done by the system. Okay, so the first law is just that. It's a law. It's elegant and airtight. If you don't like it, take it up with Sir Isaac Newton. But the thing is that they translate that into a calorie as a calorie.
Right.
To, you know, to maintain energy balance and body weight, which with U in the equation. So the equation will be U equals Q minus W. Okay, you want to play? We're going to play physics, all right? There's a nutritionist on here? Okay, get on board with this crap then, okay?
Right.
The calorie burned can go anywhere, right? From sleeping to watching TV to vigorous exercise. You know, and this whole new thing now of you better burn it or you'll store it. Well, that's already been predetermined before you put the damn thing in your mouth, right?
Right.
There's burnable carbs. There are burnable carbs under the first law of thermodynamics, right? And burnable carbs mean, and I've seen some of these sports drink companies, you know, you call me and tell me, I swear to God, I laughed for half an hour. You know, burn it or whatever.
Earn the burn or something like that. Earn the burn.
Yeah. And I was like, no, you did not just say that. You did not just say that. Okay. Okay. Where that comes from, earn the burn, is there are sugars and carbohydrates that are automatically going to burn in your body. Those are called burnable carbs. Okay. And there's sugars and carbohydrates that are just going to sit there. So if we look at, like, again, the glucose polymer, the maltodextrin, and we look at the first law of thermodynamics in a numerical value, in an equational factoid, okay, we're going to see that number, when that sugar carbohydrate hits the body, it's 130. Now, 130 is about as high as you go, and that's like a maltodextrin, right?
Right.
But the problem is, now you're legally allowed to call a maltodextrin not a sugar. Now, how they came up with that brilliant idea, I don't know. But I think it was pretty much a sugar company that said,
yeah.
Can we say that a maltodextrin isn't a sugar? It's the most fattening sugar on the face of the earth, and it's the sugar that will disrupt a sports drink and disrupt your body the quickest. So if we look at sugar, just regular sucrose, plain sucrose, okay?
Like table sugar, right, Doc? Just plain sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know now the whole issue of sugars has moved into the stevias, the glycosides, like Truvia, okay?
Right.
We know a little bit of something about that research, all right? The point is, if you eat Truvia, right? You look at Truvia and you go, what is it? And you look on the packet and it says, made from the stevia plant. It ain't stevia. Stevia is an illegal sweetener in the United States, by the way.
Right.
Okay? And for good reasons. There's some DNA damage involved with some of the glycosidic compounds in the stevia plant, okay? Not too good, like licorice, glycosides will cause spontaneous abortion in a woman in the first trimester. Licorice sweeteners are illegal, okay? So that's why stevia is not a legal sweetener. So guess what? Made from the stevia plant. Yeah. It's one of the rubidiosidase. It's one of the glycosidic compounds in stevia that doesn't happen to do any damage. So you can say made from stevia all you want, but it's really one of these, you know, the safe glycosidic compounds. So now we're getting into a whole sugar thing with, what is a sugar? Is agave a sugar? Is stevia a sugar? Is Truvia a sugar? What the hell is a sugar, you know?
Right.
And so if we look at those numbers where regular sucrose is 78 to 87, depending on the person that drinks it. Because remember, almost 80% of the American public has metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, which means that 80% of the athletes and the people in the United States drinking a sports drink are going to get a different metabolic response because their blood sugars at, you know, it functions differently. If you have prediabetes or type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes, do you think you handle sugars the same as somebody who doesn't? Well, no, you don't. But 80% of the public has some type of metabolic syndrome or insulin resistance. So now we're getting to a really much more complicated issue of sugars.
All right. Well, hey, Doc, we got to cut out for a quick break here. When we come back, let's just talk about the relationship between the brain and the body and how those two work together. I also want to talk about, you know, when we first met and the first question you asked me, because I want to get to that in this show. And also, I want to go over an interesting statement by a very notable journalist who talks about fast carbs and slow carbs and how they act in the body, if you're okay hanging around for this break.
Absolutely.
Okay, everybody, stick around. The Crush War on Sugar continues right after this with Dr. Andoise Allen.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. Jeff Frischel here. The con man is rocking it out, keeping us on track as usual. We're your weekly source for performance information. Hey, listen, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, do get to us. Crushperformance.com is the website. Info at Crush Performance. Crush with a K is the email. We answer every single email we get. And listen, if you have an idea for a show, if you have a question, let us know. We may dedicate a segment of a show or an entire episode to your thoughts or your questions. Let us know there for sure. Today, the Crush War on Sugar rages on, and I'm very proud to have with us Crush favorite once again, Dr. Andoise Allen, the Chief of Biomedical Research for the Glycemic Research Institute. Dr. Allen, thanks for hanging on over the break there.
Cool.
Listen, a real important conversation is coming together here as we just sort of try to spread the good word. And again, this isn't opinion. This isn't conjecture. This is just hardcore science and reality. Doc, before we get going, I want to take everybody back to the first time we met, which was years ago. I was working with the Blue Jays and we were in the darkest days of the drugs and sports era. And it's unfortunate that people can't get to know the athletes better because there's so many athletes who just wanted nothing to do with it. A lot of athletes got tied up into it because they just wanted to keep their jobs. And then there were those guys who just wanted to make, you know, get there and do it. But that being said, my quest that led me to you was trying to find better solutions for my athletes. I wanted it for my athletes. And when we eventually first sat down at a table to have dinner in Florida, you asked me a question. You said, Jeff, what do you need? And I said, Dr. Allen, look, I work with professional golfers. I have endurance athletes, Ironmen. I've got my baseball players. I got hockey players and football players, all of these different animals, and they all have to go down to the corner store and, you know, they all buy the exact same supplements, the exact same drinks. And I said, I need options for all these different types of animals. And that's where our relation started. That was years ago. And the science is finally sort of catching up to the point where we can address all of these different animals accordingly. And that's one of the big problems with today's supplement sport drink in landscape right now, wouldn't you say?
Oh, my God. It's really a nightmare of recrimination. You know, the first group that we used as our guinea pigs to test growth hormone was I had to find the largest grazing dinosaurs, you know, that would just chomp out growth hormone. And that was the World Powerlifting Federation. I worked with them for years and years. And what we would do is we would try to figure out when they stimulated growth hormone, what made them stimulate growth hormone, get them off the drugs, you know, and put them on to natural growth hormone. And then we started working with the Mr. Universes and Miss Galaxies to see, you know, what's different about their body. And we'd ask them, well, what sports drinks or what are you taking or what, you know. And then we'd track it in the blood and go, what the hell's going on here, right? So, you know, really, when we get into that, you know, an elephant doesn't eat the same thing as a jaguar, right?
Right.
And when you get into what we're now looking at, the new future of sports drinks is sports-specific sports drinks. So,
amen.
When I spoke at the PGA and designed a drink for Spalding and the PGA. For, you know, David Duvall was using a bunch of the Billy
Casper.
And Byron Casper.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what we saw was these guys who play golf, right, they make a lot of money. So they come to me and they go, hey, look, we feel like we're getting spacey in, you know, Logan. I said, okay, that's called reactive hypoglycemia. And they go, okay, whatever. But I said, what are you drinking out there? What are you doing? Well, they were drinking these, you know, high glycemic sports drinks and different sports drinks. And I was like, okay, first of all, you are not depleting muscle glycogen out there as you drive around on your golf cart. So what we saw back then in the 80s was different fuel partitioning for different athletes. It was fascinating because we saw, okay, these guys that, you know, these women that squat 260, these guys that lift 1,000 pounds, they're utilizing fuel differently, okay? And what you have to understand, if you're going to design a sports drink or drink a sports drink, is how mammals sense nutrients in the blood, and then they store the sugar. So then we go back to burnable carbs, right? Mammals have a sensing system for nutrients in the blood, and they decide, okay, we're going to store that sugar, we're going to burn it. And that's predetermined by what that sugar is. So those of you who want to read it, you might want to read The Regulation of Mammalian Gene Expression by Glucose. And, you know, I can give you 50 other references. But the point is, how do humans and mammals sense nutrients after it gets into the bloodstream, which after you drink it, and then what do they do with that sugar, okay?
Right.
Does the brain recognize that as a brain-friendly biofuel, or does it go, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, okay? So if we look at, for example, a drink that's improperly designed, whether that's a sports drink or whatever kind of drink, okay? Mm-hmm. For example, in adipose tissue, in fat tissue, insulin is required to stimulate the insertion of the glucose transporter called GLUT4. Now, in sports drinks, we're more interested in GLUT1 and GLUT2. Okay, and that's into the plasma membrane, and it promotes the uptake of glucose into the adipocyte, which is the fat cell. So what we learned about women that go to the gym and exercise, not women athletes, because that's a whole different fuel partitioning, right?
Right.
But women who are trying to lose weight, they go into the gym, right, and they're drinking either high glycemic drink or they're drinking protein, okay? Women who are trying to lose weight and they're not athletes should not drink protein while they exercise, because when you drink the protein, it actually totally stops the fat burning process. So it doesn't allow the fat cell to burn fat, which is really stupid if that's what you're trying to do, right? And then if you look at what's defining reduced sports performance at the cellular level, and that's where we got to go down to, right? We
yes.
got to go to the cellular level to see what is reduced sports performance and how can a sports drink induce reduced sports performance. Well, we know that, okay? In beta cell-derived INS1 and HIT T15 cells, AMPK activation and AMP levels are both suppressed when the glucose concentration rises over the range that activates insulin secretion. So that's all nice and good, but that's good, hard science, okay?
Yeah.
So if you have to define on a clinical level what reduced sports performance is and reduced muscle performance in an athlete, you can say if you drink the wrong sports drink, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah. And
okay,
talking.
So the worst thing that an athlete can do,
yep.
and it's been shown in so many clinical definitive studies, is to stimulate insulin. Insulin is the death hormone that causes Alzheimer's, type 2 diabetes, type 3 diabetes. Insulin is not the way to go. So a lot of athletes think, well, I need insulin to drive protein into the muscle. That's a load of crap. It's the insulin that your brain supplies, okay, that it determines how much insulin you're going to need to metabolize protein. So, you know, the whole thing of how sports drinks are made and fuel partitioning is really just whacked out. But that's okay. It's going to come into alliance because the science has come into alliance.
Right. Hey, Doc, for the layman out there, bottom line is if we consume the wrong type of fuel, the body reacts the wrong way. If we look at the average sport drink out there right now, just off the shelf, the regular sport drinks, we're looking at 21 grams per serving of just sugars, types of sugars. That's per serving. Most of those bottles contain 52 grams of sugar in a bottle, and they break it down per serving. So on our Twitter feed this this week. The conversation sort of went to calorie in, calorie out. If you consume sugar, it supplies energy to the body. That's what a sport drink is supposed to do. But that's not how it works. Based on all that science and clinical information you just talked about, the bottom line is this. The body reacts in certain ways to certain types of fuels, and it can be catastrophic for certain types of performance. Hence the idea of, you know, what kind of animal are you? If you're a speed and power animal, you don't want the same type of fuel source as an Ironman, a distance animal, like, you know, maybe a long haul, an elephant, slow and steady and long. Would that be a safe, accurate analogy?
Yeah, and really, you know, what you're looking at, the most important new breakthroughs in sports drinks and where it's going to come down to is neuroreceptors and neural nutrition and that whole field, because you got two messages. And we saw this in the 80s. We went, what the heck is this? Conflicting messages. So these athletes would drink a sports drink or a protein drink, and then we'd see conflicting metabolic messages, and we'd see metabolic cascades that were not good. And we went, well, what's that? What's causing that? It's because the defining and the definition of a good sports drink, they were just throwing stuff in a bottle and going, here's some sugar, here's some, you know, carbohydrates, drink that. Here's some electrolytes. And that whole electrolyte thing, don't even get me started on that, because there's a lot of misconceptions about electrolytes and drinks. But really what it comes down to is operational control of energy expenditure by the brain, okay?
Right.
So if you think that you can overrule the brain, really, try to do something as an athlete and don't get your brain involved. Really, I'd like to see that. That's called Lou Gehrig's disease, when you can't get your brain to respond and then your body reacts, right? So the whole new field of science, not just in sports drinks, but in sports overall, is the combination of the message to the brain, okay, whether it's brain glycemic indexing or fuel partition or biofriendly brain fuels. Okay, the brain has a very tight juncture called the blood-brain barrier. And if it doesn't like a carbohydrate or sugar, it goes, nope, don't like you. You're not coming in. It don't like maltodextrins.
Right.
Okay? It does not like glucose polymers. Okay? So what we're talking about is a whole new field, okay, of the brain, of switch the brain, switch the game. So the brain, by virtue of its operational control of food intake and energy expenditure, remember, energy expenditure, okay, decides what the game is going to be.
Right.
So if you think you're deciding what the game is going to be, you're wrong. And if you design a sports drink that doesn't take operational control of energy expenditure by the brain and fuel partitioning into account, and which is basically leads to an energy homeostasis system, okay? So what we're talking about is the body, when it drinks a sports drink, it has this set anthropologically, evolutionarily set pathogenesis of physical defense system. And it doesn't like certain things, right? It likes brain-friendly metabolic fuel, okay? Because that affects the hypothalamic neurons controlling energy balance, which are called the AGRP neurons. So really, if we're talking about the gut-brain axis and energy homeostasis neurocircuitry, okay, which we, you know, brain scans are in order, okay, comparing brain scans to the metabolism, are there any sports drinks that are doing that right now that are looking at the hypothalamic neurons controlling energy balance in the brain?
No.
And then coordinating the gut and brain axis? Because that's what it's going to take.
Right.
Okay?
And Doc, hey, listen, Doc, this is, you know, for our listeners, we're probably leaps and bounds in the stratosphere over their heads right now in terms of the science. But this is the science, and this is how deep you have to go. Hey, I want to run this one by you. You want a very notable journalist in a running magazine recently wrote an article saying that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the gist of the article was that it doesn't matter whether you have fast carbs or slow carbs going into the system, simple sugars or complex sugars, simple carbohydrates, or fast carbohydrates going into the body, because it can only metabolize so fast. This is such a false statement. It got me angry because it's not about the breakdown. It's not about the rate of the breakdown, is it? It's what
right.
those simple sugars or complex sugars tell the body to do in the interim.
Right.
That's
after
devastating.
That. After
right.
that.
Yeah.
So that is about the stupidest statement I got to tell you I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I was angry because this is a big article. article and a notable journalist that just has it wrong. And look, we're not blaming anybody for what they don't know.
People, I blame bad science.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, okay, hey. So here's what's wrong with that. Okay?
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, we understand the timing, okay, the gastric timing and the metabolic timing of how sugars and carbohydrates break down, okay? Okay, that's not the game anymore. That is it. You're on the wrong page, buddy boy.
Right.
It's like, what are you talking about? It's what happens after that, okay? Yeah, we know how long it takes. Duh. We know how long it takes a sugar or a carbohydrate to break down in the body. Okay, that's a really easy, first grade science. But we're not talking about. We're talking about specialized neurocircuits that translate homeostatic needs into motivated behaviors, okay?
Yeah.
And metabolic systems technology.
So hey,
like,
Doc.
Sweet, okay?
Yeah.
Like, let me take an example. The thing that drives me crazy, is a sports drink that's ketogenic. In other words, it doesn't have any calories or carbs.
Right.
Well, but it's sweet, right? Sweet does not convey fuel to the brain. The calibration system in the brain doesn't respond to that. It says, oh, that's a sweet drink. That ain't no freaking fuel in the brain.
Right.
We're talking about homeostatic needs and neural circuitry that has to be in the form of a drink, okay?
Okay.
Metabolic system technology and the calibration of the brain, it's going to look at a drink that's a ketogenic drink and go, what do you want me to do with this? So, you know, if you look at even Harvard University, they have quantified that data using arterial spin label functioning magnetic resonance and imaging, okay?
Yes. Love it.
And I would say that's pretty good data. What they found out was the mesolimbic dopamine system of the brain, which converges on the nucleus accumbens, which is part of the striatum, plays a central role in reward and craving and thirst, and this mediates hedonic food responses. In other words, when blood sugar levels drop. So if you're drinking a just artificially sweetened drink or no calories or no carbs, okay, oh, that's a really good idea, okay, because that's what's going to cause reactive hypoglycemia. When your blood sugar drops, right,
yep,
the striatum in the brain recognizes this and calls an alert, and it says, okay, danger, danger, well, you know, we got bad stuff going on here. This is really dangerous because your blood glucose concentrations increase the food stimulus and beverage activation of the striatum in the brain, and it says, okay, give me something else to drink because this ain't going to go. So you got to look at the valence, the dynamics, and the neural circuitry engaged by the AGRP proteins. And the brain detects that.
Right.
The neurons in the brain, especially if you look at, you know, the MRIs, the arcuate region of the pentavicular hypothalamus, and that's the alarm system. You know what that does? It's going to act like a warning system. Okay, so if you look at blood glucose transporters and their relationship to local energy demand, which again is fuel partitioning, you're going to see that a lot of the sports drinks are delineating this neural circuitry by which AGRP neurons defend against and deciphering metabolic pathways and causing a metabolic cascade that results in reduced sports performance.
Okay, hey,
Doc. Until you incorporate that.
Yeah.
Into the data,
yep.
You're not going to make a good sports drink.
Right. Okay. Hey, so let's do this in 2 minutes, Doc, because we got to cut out for a quick break, and then I want to get to how it's addictive, how sugar can be addictive. Hey, in a couple minutes, let's go back to our golfer. Let's use our golfer as an example. I'm going to throw a scenario at you. So this is going to be like one of those shot clock sort of things. The shot clock is going to be ticking like in 30 seconds to a minute. Can you answer this? We have a golfer that drinks the same sport drink that, let's say, our Ironman drinks. There's 32 grams of sugar going into a golfer who doesn't need the energy. Can you really explain for the layman out there and our audience who really are digging this kind of science, what happens when that amount of sugar goes into an athlete who doesn't need it?
Yeah, it makes me crazy. It's crazy. Okay.
Okay, I'm starting the clock
talking about
and
a turtle,
go.
A turtle versus a jaguar.
Right.
A turtle ain't going to eat the same foods as a jaguar. And basically, what you have to do is a sports drink has to have the capacity, right, in order to communicate with the brain, to cross the blood-brain barrier into the hypothalamus, and that's where it's metabolized and used as an energy source. So you want to know what the mechanism is of a burnable carb. Okay, that's the mechanism.
Right.
It's metabolized and used as an energy source. Now, in a golfer needs maybe, in a sports drink, maybe 2 to 3 grams of carbohydrate. Anything else is going to cause a metabolic cascade in his body that causes reduced hand-to-eye coordination.
Sure.
Now, we've done this data. We've created golf drinks. We've tested them in the PGA, and it's falling. And when we switched them, when we switched these athletes, Vice President Spalding, for example, over to one that had, you know, was metabolizing the sports drink as a utilizable energy source in the brain and the body with a low directed carbohydrates, okay, then what we saw was a hole-in-one at like 375 yards, a hole-in-one at 425 yards. We saw some amazing things because their hand-to-eye coordination improved. If you download masses of especially like glucose, glucose polymers, you know, maltodextrins mixed with sucrose into a golfer's body, he's going to crash, he's burned. He's definitely going to see a reduction in his performance of maybe up to 80%.
Yeah,
okay?
And that's a
but
huge
yet if you
number.
Give another drink to the Jaguar, he's going to go, I don't want that. I don't want 2 grams of right, carbohydrate.
Yeah. So the key here, Doc.
So look at it this way, okay?
Yeah.
If you want greater endurance capacity, okay, let's just talk about that. I don't care who you are. You want greater endurance capacity, mm-hmm. right? Burnable carbs taken before exercise equal greater endurance capacity.
So what would be
that
an example of a burnable
on biochemical,
carb?
Well, hold on, blood yep. glucose, insulin, free fatty acids, lipid oxidation, carbohydrate oxidation rates, and muscle glycogen content. And then you combine that with whatever the functional exercise is, what they're doing, okay?
Yeah.
You can see that burnable carbs taken before exercise equals greater endurance capacity. So you take an athlete who may need a heck of a lot more carbohydrates. But, you know, it's for one thing, here's the deal. It's right now, it's not so much, well, you know, you get into these anything, you know, you get into these 40, 50 grams of carbohydrates, that's insane.
It's
that's
totally insane.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Your body can't use that. It doesn't work that way. Welcome to the real world, Mr. Banks. It don't work that way, you know, in carbohydrate chemistry.
Right.
And so what you're talking about is, okay, a properly designed burnable carb drink, you know, that has the appropriate biochemical makeup to it and you know, very synergistic and homeostatic ingredients in it is going to give the athlete what he wants. So you might say, okay, well, if you're this athlete, you're this kind of athlete, you need to take, you know, 2 or 3 drinks. But if you're a golfer, you know, only take, you know, half of this and mix the other half with water.
Love it.
So, I mean,
love
you know,
it.
It's eventually going to get sold where there's sports specific drinks. And, you know, I'm working with a lot of researchers now on how to do that.
Well,
and the only way to do it is to quantify it in brain glycemic chemistry and brain fuel partitioning combined with, you know, the gut-brain axis, how it metabolizes. So if you have a sugar that metabolizes one way in the body and it metabolizes a different way in the brain, you've got a conflicting message, ergo reduce sports performance.
Okay.
Not good.
Doc, you got it. Not good. Hey, we got to cut off for a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the addiction principle because that's come up in our Twitter feeds here recently. And we'll talk solutions right now, simple solutions right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We only have a couple minutes left with Dr. Andres Allen. Doc, thanks for hanging on over the break there. Only a couple minutes left. So listen, in closing remarks, a lot of science there. It's just a hard shot of reality. It's been a great War on Sugar episode, Doc. Closing remarks from you. In about a minute, we have about a minute left here. We wanted to get to addiction. We'll leave that for another day. We have questions about Ensure and some of the protein supplements. We'll get to those another day. But fantastic conversation, Doc. If you had a message to send to our listeners right now, what would it be, just looking at our overall theme of our conversation?
I have no idea. It's too damn complicated.
Yeah, it is. But to keep it simple, right, Doc? Moderation is the key. Keep it simple. And you really
do. Yeah, but moderation of what?
Of the amount of sugar? The amount of sugar that we're consuming? Does that make sense?
On the sugar.
Pardon me?
It depends on the sugar.
Right. So it's not as
just
simple.
Just remember that addictions, okay, and addictions in the brain are controlled by the, you know, the prefrontal cortex and dopamine, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why children get addicted to drinks and foods and things like that. As I've said before, you know, eating sucrose sugar in a child is equivalent to smoking a crack pipe when you look at an MRI.
Right.
And then that just builds up as it's not about self-control anymore. You know, there's tertiary types of brain control. And when those neurotransmitters bond to receptors, it's like a key being slid into machine and turning it on.
Right.
Okay, so humans aren't controlling that. It's controlled by the brain. And neurotransmitters, especially the dopamine receptors and serotonin receptors, get us addicted to food and beverages. So, you know, we just want to drink them over and over and over and over. And the bad part of that, in an athlete, it causes, you know, reduced sports performance. But in a child, it causes addictive drinking and eating behavior, and it causes the generation of new fat cells called progenitor fat cells. So, you know, I think that the message is that the new science will reveal how you coordinate, for example, the NORAD missile warning system in the brain,
yep,
which is AGRP neurons, and beverages, and that you can't just design a beverage that doesn't address brain glycemic indexing and neural nutrition. And I think that's going to be across the board in sports nutrition. I think that's what's coming next.
Great, Doc. Listen, we got to cut out. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for listening, everybody. More Dr. Allen in the next few weeks. We got to get you back on. Thanks, Doc. Really appreciate it today.
Thanks, Crush. Great job.
Okay, fantastic. Hey, everybody, thanks. We're over time here. Thank you for listening. And you can get the podcast on crushperformance.com, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher. Thanks for listening and stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next week.